Welcome to episode 5 of the MSX Insider. I'm joined with my co-host Sasha, and we're glad to be back for the final term of our academic careers at Stanford, hopefully.
Can't believe it. Everything goes well.
Yeah, and we've got the next season of the podcast, so we've got some great guests coming up, and we just had a mad scramble yesterday to choose my courses, so I'm glad I'm here, and I'm glad I'm recording the podcast a little bit more calm than I was yesterday evening.
Yeah, so we started the spring quarter, our final quarter, last Thursday. And the first couple of days of the quarter, we get to test out, you know, all the classes that we sign up for. And last night at midnight was the deadline to drop any classes or add any classes. And so, as per the usual, we all think that we have such a great schedule in place, and we start joining classes and say, oh no.
Yeah.
What happened yesterday, Jatin?
Exactly. So, you know, I actually think this podcast saved me. So I went to pick up the mic yesterday to record the podcast, and I bumped into a bunch of people, and somebody in the class saw my face and was like, dude, you look so tired. Like, what's wrong? I was like, and these guys are coming out of, I think, a humor in business class. So they're like all smiles, all happy. And yeah, I'm coming from like a 5-hour slog in the library of building a financial model. And I was like, man, I don't know if I can do this for the whole quarter, because I have a deep finance background, and you know, the course is great, but it's highly demanding. And I spoke to a few more people, eventually had a glass of wine with a few MSXs, and they were like, you need to drop this thing, man. It's not going to suit your last term. And that was a pretty big part of my load this quarter. So I phoned Sasha late yesterday. I was like, what else can I take? And I managed to slot a few more courses in. And I'm feeling a lot better and lighter about the quarter ahead. So.
I think one of the trends that I noticed was, because we're only here for 1 year, which means we have 4 quarters, one of which is in the summer. So that's, you know, fully taken up with all of our core classes. So we basically have 3 quarters that we can take electives in. Everybody's taking like 18, 20 credits in the fall quarter and in the winter quarter to take as much advantage and, you know, take as many electives as possible. And the one trend that I've seen this quarter is everyone is taking minimum needed to graduate.
Yeah.
So we need 60 credits to graduate because we've all front loaded everything. I think most people are taking between 12 and 15 credits this quarter. Because I mean, the reality is we got to focus on what's next too, right? And have a little fun. So I think we have to find that balance.
Yeah, the weather's great. Today's a lovely 79 degree Fahrenheit, or what, 25 yeah. degrees Celsius. We've got a give both, because there's probably a lot of international people on the audience. And it's great outdoors. You know, we were at Microsoft this morning with our guest Dowlands as well. You know, it's also like the last bit of celebrating our experience a little bit. So
absolutely,
you know, we that's going to be the theme of, I think, of the next few podcasts, hopefully, of celebrating all these great moments that we've had and the great people that we've interacted with. And we have somebody really awesome on our guest list today, right?
Exactly. So speaking of that, I'm going to try to do my best to give Dolans and his background justice. But Dolans came to the GSB with about 20 years of experience. So one of our more seasoned classmates has a degree in mechanical engineering, a master's in economics, a PhD in economics from Boston University, and the MSX degree is his 4th degree. He started out his career as an auditor, spending some time in consulting at McKinsey and BCG, and then I think more recently spending a number of years at Bertelsmann, which is a multinational education and media conglomerate. So we can talk a little bit about your experience there. And came to Stanford, was lucky enough to be part of the student council with him, and he was one of the class presidents, and is also an NFL fan. We'll have to get into whether that's new or, you know, you've been a longtime fan. But yeah, I'll just turn it over to you if you want to share anything else about your background.
Well, no, thank you. You're being too generous. On this season, yes, I am. Yeah, you have the wine hair to prove it, so it's hard to hide from it. But yeah, so you said to talk about Bertelsmann. Bertelsmann was a funny thing. I was at BCG after McKinsey, and I thought, you know, maybe I'll have a couple of years here. And then I was on the beach, as they say, doing some slides, and then something came up on education. Education was always close to my heart. because, you know, education is exactly what propelled my life going forward. And then I did a presentation. The partner took me there, and I present to a bunch of nice Germans that were investigating entering in Brazil. And that came up later as an invitation to join their team when they were set up in a new office. And then I spent 11 years there. And just the own funny thing is, when I jumped in, I thought, oh, in 3 months, 6 months, we're going to buy a company and I'll be, you know, a senior manager or a director because I'm close into this project. Great. And we are looking for an education company to buy. And then I realized I didn't understand really due diligence. I didn't understand, like, what a putting on a call is, what are, you know, deal terms. And, you know, 2 years later, we didn't buy anything. 4 years later, we didn't buy anything. We ended up partnering with a private equity and then building from the ground, basically, through a buy and build strategy, the Brazil's largest education company. So, yeah.
Yeah, and that listed on the NASDAQ, right, a couple of years ago?
Yeah, so it was crazy because we envisioned that project as something. We were going to build something with experienced private equity that will clean up the house, and then Bertelsmann will buy it. But when it came for an exit, Bertelsmann was not ready. Said, oh, you know, Brazil is difficult, I don't know. And then the private equity said, okay, if you're not going to buy, I'm going to list. And then they chose to list at NASDAQ. It was like a lot of work to get the company ready with, you know, all the compliance and requirements for IPO at NASDAQ is really different level from what would be to do in the stock exchange in São Paulo. And the management team managed to do that. And then I joined the board of that company and stayed there for the next 3 years.
Well, so let's go all the way back, right? So I'll share a story, a very funny story about Dahlin. So in our entrepreneurship in VC class, they ask the class, you know, who is a fan of being of accounting? And there's one hand in the class that goes up, and it's Dahlin's. And then Dahlin's like, we always chat after the class, and he's like, dude, I tell you, accounting is up there with some of the greatest inventions in the world, like relativity, like the stuff that Einstein made. And I was like, Dahlin's, are you serious? He's like, yeah, I'm serious. And then I went and I was like, I did the research yesterday. I was like, Dahlin started his career as an auditor. And I was like, wow, okay, now it's all making sense, right? So Dahlin's is a mechanical engineer who then becomes the auditor, who then goes to do a master's and in economics and then a PhD. Then you go to consulting. Then you go to Bertelsmann. I mean, how do you manage these transitions in your careers? Because a lot of us are looking to pivot and make choices. And something that you struck me that you said today is like you're fairly relaxed about how you go with these things, you go with the flow. Can you just talk us through about your career and how you've went from one thing to another?
Well, that's something I'm trying to kind of change. I think it's a, I told Sasha this morning, it's a bug, not a feature, that I'm not so intentional on the things I do.
Yeah.
And that also has to do with my initial BBL back in the summer, where I said, you know, don't go after looking to work on what you love. Try to love what is in front of you. So that, I think, required from me a less intentionality because growing up in a reasonably poor family, my parents have only 4 years of education. So I had little visibility of all the avenues I could be pursuing. And so I have to, I'll go and try this. Oh, this works. It's great. And I find in love with that. And then I move to another thing. So it's more of the serendipity of it and, you know, but I, you know, being at Stanford with so much pressure to be intentional of everything, it kind of feels more a bug than a feature. So I don't know where exactly I will be reflecting on it as a bug or a feature later on. So
well, it can be both, right? You know, I think it's a gift for you to be like that relaxed and to kind of choose some amazing opportunities. Because, I mean, Sasha and I were just having lunch with you by chance early on, and we're like, you know what, we've got a long way to go, right? And, you know, it's incredible that you've done these things. So, you know, let's kind of talk about, you know, your last time in the U.S., you know, back in the U.S. I mean, what's life like in that, in terms of going from the U.S. back to Brazil, coming back with your family, with your kids? Because, you know, when you're making these decisions, there's a few other people impacted as well, right?
Yeah, so that's, the experience is very different. I think, surprisingly to me, the U.S. is in a very different place these days than it were 20 years ago. So 20 years ago, I came in 2002, still, you know, I was still training my English, still learning English. And one of the things I used to do is ride the bus, listen to the radio talk, because, oh, this is good practice for me. And we were still in the middle of the Iraq invasion and, you know, Afghanistan, what's going on. But the U.S. was not so divided. Actually, it was more united, maybe, on those topics. Today, it's so, you know, it's so polarized, and we see that movement, you know, in Brazil as well and so on. So it's a very different environment in that sense. Also, criminality here has been going up. I don't know if it's a California thing that they are more liberal on it, but I don't feel as safe as I felt 20 years ago. So it was a different experience in that sense. On the family thing, yeah, it's a completely different experience. Like, it was a dream to come to the U.S. And, you know, the means I found was, okay, I got a scholarship and I'll move there on a scholarship at Boston University, which I am very grateful for their offer. But I was alone. It was scary, but easy. I have been to the U.S., I think, once before. On a training with Arthur Anderson as an auditor, a company that's a defunct company now. But this time was a very different thing. It was like convincing my wife, who was not so convinced to come to the U.S., but I think the pitch was always, look what, you know, learning English and being exposed to all this, you know, international environment that the U.S. has so easily for you has done for me. And we need to give that to our kids. So the main reason to come was, you know, focus on the kids and the fact that I finished that cycle with, you know, AFIA at NASDAQ and so on. I said, look, it's now or never. I'm reaching an age where if I wait 5 more years, I won't have the courage. If I have the courage, the U.S. will not allow me. I said, come on, you're too old. You're coming here only for the health system. No, we don't need you. So it was a kind of my last chance to say, you know, we can make the most of out of the experience now. And I always threaten my wife, saying, you know, you don't want to be in that place unfamiliar with the West because your kids will go to the college there and then you want to go there. And I'm like, okay, let me get used to that idea. So
hearing your story just kind of reminds me of my own experience, because I think that's exactly the sort of thought process that my dad had. Was, you know, growing up in the Philippines, I thought that that was my life, my home, that we were going to live there forever. And, you know, when I was a senior in high school, my dad had this exact same realization that, you know, all the kids are going to go to college and where are they going to go? Like, they're going to go to the U.S. and are they ever going to come back? And, you know, made that decision to uproot the family. And now we've been here 20 years. So yeah. Who knows? 20 who years, knows? You yes, might be yes, here exactly. too.
Yeah, so, maybe following in Sasha's dad's footsteps with your kids, right? Mm-hmm.
Like, yes, exactly. It's like, yeah, this story repeating itself. So, yeah, it was a little bit you know, convincing. And then that is another challenge of, you know, the logistics and get the house properly set and, you know, getting my wife used to the new life, which she has done very well now. So I'm glad that I did.
Now, Dallas is one of the hardest working people in the orientation period, getting his house ready for his wife. I know, it was one of the funniest chats we'd have. And that's how we actually connected in the start, right? Yeah, he was scrubbing the corners. He was like really making it.
Yeah, I put a lot of effort in the house and was not, it still was not enough because we didn't have those days. And then I went to Vegas, which was a great experience. I don't regret 1 minute, but, you know, cost time of. And I did the crazy then, that after the first week of classes, okay, I went there to pick them up. Yeah. That was really costly.
Yeah, I remember that.
Like, okay, I have to catch up now on the workload. And yes.
Yeah, you flew there for the weekend or something like that. Like,
I record my presidential pitch from the hotel because I got stranded in Atlanta and I couldn't fly to Brazil.
That's
so it's
right.
Like I record that at 2 in the morning in the hotel there.
Just, and still got elected.
Yeah, you see.
So do you feel like the world's a smaller place relative to 2002, or do you feel it's like still as big as it was in terms of just making a hop back to Brazil the way you did?
No, it's definitely, I think, a smaller place. And I think, you know, 2002, the internet is not there as it is today. You know, I came to the U.S. which is the most advanced place. People were still on the flip phones, and you know, so now you know communication has really shortened distance big time. It's and one thing, one big difference from 20 years ago is like my English training was like, oh, I need to train for the TOEFL and do better. It's like, oh, can I get a book and a CD and be listening? And today you have a ton of content online. It's much easier to get access to those things. So
yeah, absolutely. So we talked about Brazil, which is where you're from a little bit. And in our cohort out of 73, we've got 6 Brazilian classmates. And in the incoming MSX 2025 cohort, there's a bunch of Brazilians as well. Tell us a little bit about Stanford's reputation in Brazil. Like, what makes it so popular? Because it's pretty far.
Yeah, it's pretty far. And there are some schools that have a great hold of, you know, the Brazilian financial scene. But JSB has a great reputation for being, you know, a little bit of more of a cooler place where, you know, has a reputation for not being so a competitive school. Not to get in, but once you're here, it's more collaborative environment. And I think we have experienced that. So it has a great reputation there. And I think there are some people that, you know, are helping to spread the word there. Alumni and even professionals that work in admissions process that has been, you know, being stronger and stronger year after year. And then I think we get a really great demand coming in, you know. All the talks I have with the admissions team here, they said, oh, I don't know what's going on in Brazil. Now we have a lot of, you know, applicants and so on. So I'm very happy to see it.
Yeah. So given that this is your second degree in the U.S., we're not trying to compare, you know, or anything like that. But talk us a little bit about how your experience here outside of the family life and what you've spoken about, but maybe academics or just the experience overall as being here versus doing your PhD at BU.
Look, to compare is very hard because the PhD, there's two phases, the classes phases and then the thesis writing. And it's more intense in the academics, like really you are in the basement every day cracking on equations and people are with you sometimes in the blackboard. So there's much more of, you know, companionship on the blackboard. Mm. Here it's, you know, the activities are more relax a little bit far from academics. Mm-hmm. There's also a great concentration of classes we can take at JSB that are more self-development or professional development or personal development that are more collaborative outside of, you know, a blackboard and so on, and less heavy on, you know, the math and so on. So the academic experience is different in that sense. And then the academic part of the PhD, when you're writing your thesis, that is brutal because if you crave for social connection, then you are basically by yourself all the time, and you know you're gonna get the window into your advisor, but that's to be criticized, not to be enjoyed. So it's a very, very different academic environment in that sense. But you know, you create bonds and the two ways anyway. But it is, I still keep I spend Christmas with a friend from my PhD years that happened to live now in California. So I create great friends there. I think I hope to get the same out of here.
Yeah, I was thinking about this the other day because the GSB only has 3 degree programs. It's the MBA program, our program, the MSX, and the PhDs. And there are like tons of events that are happening every single day at lunchtime. And usually the event, they'll always start with, you know, who's an MBA 1, who's an MBA 2, who's an MSXer. And they never ask about the PhDs. And I never actually see them, but maybe they're locked in some basement. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a very different dynamic, and it's a very, I mean, when I took it and the way there's economics here, I don't know if it's an economics program that runs at the JSB, probably is more as a management program. It's very research focused, so you have to go to the seminars that the other professors come to give on specific topics, and then you are, you know. The academic is always rewarded for research, never for teaching. And here, actually, they have this benefit of being this crazy environment of Silicon Valley where there's a lot of practitioners to do the teaching with, pairing with faculty. So actually, I think the faculty have a much easier life than, you know, if you are in a program in academics in Minnesota where people are, oh, what is the protection here? No, there's no protection here. Is this theory, a theory, and theory? So it's a very different environment.
Yeah, I think that that is one of the coolest and maybe most surprising things of my experience, like coming to the GSB, was the number of practitioners that we have actually teaching us classes and then, you know, sharing from their own personal experiences. Like a lot of them have, you know, managed companies, sold companies, and have cases written about them and, you know, bring in the guests that they bring in. I mean, it's just so, it's so interesting. And I don't think I would have had this kind of an opportunity anywhere else.
I mean, Dolan, when you look at, I mean, your academic career and you come back to Stanford and you look at what Sasha just said, do you ever feel like, wow, this could have been a whole different world for me had I stayed in academics and ended up at a place like Stanford? Do you regret not going into academics full-time post the PhD?
Well, regret is not a word.
Okay.
But yes, yeah, so it would be very different. Mm. But man, you don't know how competitive this thing is.
Yeah.
It's crazy competitive, and you have to be publishing, all in the top journals for 6 years until you get tenure. So when some of our professors was like, hey, you know, I can do whatever because I have tenure. Yeah, but that is really hard to get.
Yeah.
What happens is, you know, you are in a smaller school or let's say second tier school, and then you are able to get into a place like Stanford. Then you stay 3 years here. Sometimes you're bumped down again. Like, you know, oh, I came from Harvard. I went to Stanford, and then you end up, you know, getting tenure in a second-tier school. I'm not going to name any school as a second tier. But so it's very hard. And also, I was in economics, which is slightly different from management. So, you know, here we have all more soft skills things. Or there is really the thing that deals with market are basically applied econometrics, what's something that we have seen in data and decisions, those kinds of things. The rest is theory. And theory, who really thrives in theory in economics are mathematicians. Frustrated mathematicians. They're not good enough to do math theory. They go and do applied math in economics. They are great.
Hmm.
So it's a very... So it was a choice, a conscious choice to say, one, I didn't appreciate the solitude of the job of writing papers. And I think I was not going to be able to produce the amount of papers that would be needed to get tenure at a great place. But to say, the GSB has a different environment. So really, with so much practitioners, that the problems here are more interesting.
Mm.
So in that sense, I have the envy, not the regret, but the envy that, oh, maybe if I was involved with those kind of problems in management, I would be happier just, you know, grinding to try to write those papers. But I don't regret.
I mean, I would say don't give up on that dream. You can always come back here and be a lecturer and teach some of these classes. I would attend.
I mean, Dolan's always jabbing him when he was a class president because he's got a PhD in microeconomics.
Yeah.
And the dean was always like, Dolan's, I heard you have this PhD. Like, you need to show its value over here, right?
So sitting in our base economics class.
So, yeah, the funny part is, and I understand the school on that one, they didn't excuse me from taking micro. If they have done that, I will have empty slots and I have to fill later in the course because the summer is, you know, the incoming class, we realize that the summer is the quietest period you're going to see at the GCB. It's an amazing place, but it's very quiet. There's no other classes. So I couldn't substitute during the summer for something else. So they really forced me to take the micro class. But then the funny part is the first exam came and I didn't ace to 100. And it coincided, and the results came out coinciding with our first meeting with the dean, Paul Hoyer and Margaret Hayes. And then Paul comes, is a labor economist. And then I said, I hear you have a PhD. How come you didn't get 100? I said, okay, I think some professors are, you know, misusing private information and passing along to the dean. And so then I felt the pressure to finish with honors on that class later on. But yes.
You did, right?
I did.
I was happy with the pass.
Yeah, just for everyone's context, there's like 4 grades in the GSB, or 5 in fact, where you can fail, so many people do. Then you get a low pass, which is like, I guess what, like 10% of the class, roughly.
Yeah.
You get a pass, which is like probably 60% of the class. And then you get an HP, which is a high pass, and you get honors, which is Dolan's you know, maybe one of two in the class, yeah. right? Which is, yeah.
And I will caveat that grades don't matter.
Exactly.
It's the experience and being able to challenge yourself and taking these difficult courses. Okay, maybe one last question, kind of going a little bit back to Brazil. So the three of us are from actually like every corner of the world. I grew up in Asia, you're from Latin America, Jatin is from South Africa, and all emerging markets. I'm still thinking about, you know, my own journey kind of long term, like where I would like to live, if I want to go back to Asia, stay in the US. Have you thought about, I think we were talking a bit at lunch, like you're planning to hopefully stay here for at least the short term, but have you thought about kind of going back to Brazil in the more longer term? And like, what kind of an impact would you like to have if you imagine yourself, let's say 10, 20 years from now?
So the funny part is I always told my wife and even a couple of close friends that once I hit a certain number, I would go to public office. And when I hit that number, of course, you said, oh, okay, that goes too short. You keep moving the post. So to say, if I go back or when I go back, I still consider to do public office. My wife is completely against because she's a very reserved person opposed to me that I'm quite open. I don't care. But I do understand her point, and Brazil is becoming more and more polarized on that dimension. So, yeah, I would say I'll go somehow to public office if I'm going there to try to have an impact, or maybe related fields where, you know, there's a couple of institutions that try to improve the democracy or democratic systems in Brazil. I would try to do that if I go, but that is down the road, at least 10 years from now, and the kids are a little bit older to be taking, you know, people cursing at your dad is not that easy.
I can see Darlin's running the equivalent of the Federal Reserve in Brazil or the Ministry of Finance. Hey,
yeah, that would be great.
You've definitely got the lengthy CV to back it up. Like, you know, it's the titles go around Darlin's business card.
when I sell this idea, some people laugh big time because, oh, I don't think you lack the charisma to be elected. So some people already immediately told me, oh, you go for a technical job or something like that. And then the funny part is 1 month later, this is a big lady. She emails me and said, oh, you know, the president of something wants to meet with you. So she says, you don't have the charisma, but after thinking over, said, oh, you know, there's something there. So let's see it.
And you were the class president after all. So
No, I mean, well, I wanted to just touch on, you know, you said, like, what can you do to create an impact? And I think that's like a very strong theme here at Stanford, right? And I think all of us want to be able to create an impact. And I think the one thing that I learned while coming here is that there are so many ways to do that. I think prior to coming here, I always thought of impact as kind of like social work or working at an NGO. And I've just learned that, you know, going into a public office or being the CEO of a for-profit business or working in an NGO or investing, there's so many different ways that we can consider and we can look at impact. At the end of the day, I think that's what our education here at Stanford sort of enables us to do wherever it is that we go.
Yeah, and I think it's a powerful platform because, you know, all the places that we've come from have given us so much to get to where we've got to today, right? And, you know, to the extent you can take some of this learnings and capital and talent that you come across at Stanford, right, just the ecosystem that you can benefit from and channel some of that back home, I think it, you know, it can change so many lives, right?
Yeah.
If you just change one person's life to make it better in these countries, I think it can have a generational impact. Like, look at education for you, right? You mentioned, you know, parents didn't grow up with much, and, you know, just having that start to get to where you are is kind of bloomed into whatever we have today, which is pretty incredible, right?
Yeah.
So I guess, Darlin, you know, in terms of wrapping the podcast up, if you know, if you had to go back and only back to take one class at the GSB, what would it be? And you have to have taken this class, and you have to do it again next year.
The class that I would take it again, because I like that much.
Yeah.
Look, I will put Brandon Gibber and Global Reporting which is accounting, advanced accounting for those reading. I'll take that out because that's
that wins by a long shot.
That wins by a long shot. But I think I enjoyed a lot acting with power, which was a little bit more experiential. You use your body. There was one place where I played part of story of Kayla, and you guys from familiar with the podcast know she has tons of powerful stories, and I was reenacting one of her stories, and it was my first experience with acting, really acting. Like I took another story and made mine. Acting with power, definitely it's a good one. I would like to take it again.
Yeah, there's so many great ones, right? And looking forward to this last little bit of exploring all these cool courses that, you know, maybe don't require as much work as the accounting course. But, you know, darling, what I've taken away is, you know, I think you mentioned this thing of being a feature, having a feature or bug in terms of the way you've approached your career in terms of being, I guess, a little bit less deliberate. But it's amazing to see that even if you feel you didn't be deliberate about it, it's still an incredible career that, you know, many of us at the GSB who are at this phase would be really grateful to have, right? So it just shows that, you know, you can kind of just do what you're passionate about and make the best of it, and it'll work out in a beautiful way. And then I think, you know, there's pieces about emerging markets and, you know, making an impact and going back to public service when you have the ability to do so. I think it's quite a noble ambition, and, you know, you've said it on the podcast, so hopefully you follow through with that, right?
I think for me, aside from the kind of, you know, intentionality, because I feel like my career also wasn't as intentional, I love the quote that you said, love what you do. Because I think I've personally tried to spend a lot of time this year trying to find what I love. And sometimes finding what you love doesn't necessarily mean it has to be a career. It could be a hobby. It could be how you spend your part time. But really finding like love and enjoyment in whatever it is that you end up doing, I think, you know, you can build a successful and happy career with that as well. So thanks for that.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you, everybody. We'll be back in a couple of weeks with, I think, a few more episodes this quarter. We'll have 2 or 3 more people from the class, and hopefully 1 or 2 people from previous classes, and maybe, in fact, a professor if we can get the right person on. So we have a little bit to look forward to. But thank you, everybody, for listening, and we'll be back in a couple of weeks' time.